Welcome to It Is What It Is. I'm Shamri. And it's Easter, so happy Easter, everybody. It's almost 3 o'clock. I have to go start cooking. Thank goodness, because of the corona, it's only the people in the home I'm feeding, so that's going to be nice. But today we're going to talk about James Rupert. He is the Easter massacre killer. So his early life was troubled with his mother. She told him that she would have preferred her second child to be a daughter instead of him. His father, Leonard, oh, her name is Charity. His father, Leonard, also was very violent and held little attention for his two sons. Leonard died in 1947 when James and his brother, Leonard Jr., were ages 12 and about 14. Leonard Jr. became the father figure of the family, which means he started picking on James, often torturing him and yelling at him for being weak. At 16, James was so unhappy with his home life that he ran away. He attempted suicide by hanging himself with a sheet. He was unsuccessful, so he returned home and did the walk of shame. As an adult, James stood 5'5" and weighed 135 pounds. That's me in high school. He was a very little guy. He was described as a modest, bookish, I don't know what the fuck that means, and a helpful man who was unremarkable and quiet. In addition, he had no police record. By 1975, he was envious of his older brother's successful job and family. James himself had dropped out of college after 2 years and traded as a draftsman, and then, oh, trained as a draftsman through 1975. He was unemployed and he had never married, and he was still living at home with his mother. In contrast, his older brother, Leonard Jr., was earning a degree in electrical engineering. He married James's ex-girlfriend, owned his own home in the city of Fairfield, and had 8 children. Charity, the mom, was frustrated with James and his inability to hold a steady job and his constant drinking. She threatened to evict him from her home on more than one occasion. James owed his mother and brother money, having lost much of it. He had lost a little bit of cash, all the cash he had when the market crashed in 1973. What a shame. So, a month before the massacre, James acquired a silencer for his weapons while purchasing ammunition. Goodness, that word is so hard. It's like aluminum foil. His behavior is generally becomes more unusual, which I guess he is a very unusual guy, so to be more unusual is probably really terrifying. He seemed to be engaging in target practice shooting a lot more often with cans in his 357 Magnum, sure, along the banks of the Great Miami River in Milton, no, in Hamilton, sorry. The night before the murders, James went out as he usually did. This is March. So on March 29th was his 41st birthday. Witnesses said he seemed too engaged, like more engaged in the target practice than in the festivities of his 41st. 41. Jesus Christ. That's not old at all. It's not far away. I'm just joshing. That's like 10 years away. 11 years away, I'm fine. Anyway, so the night before the murders, like I said, he went out to the bar. He went at the 19th Hole Cocktail Lounge, I guess. He talked to an employee there named Wanda. She was 28 years old, a mother of five. She would later state that James told her he was frustrated with his mother's demand his mother demanding him around and his impending eviction that he needed to solve the problem. According to Bishop, James stated that his mother had complained that if he had not paid her, he was going to be kicked out, and that if he could afford to drink, then he could afford to pay the rent, which she is not wrong. He left the bar at 11 p.m. that night and later returned. When she asked him when he came back, "Did you solve the problem?" he said, "No, not yet." He closed the bar down till 2:30 in the morning. So the next day was Easter. So on Easter, March 30th, 1975, James's brother Leonard, his wife Elma, brought their 8 children, ranging from ages 4 to 17, to see their grandmother at the house on Minor Avenue. James stayed upstairs, sleeping off the night of drinking, while the other family members performed an Easter egg hunt on the front lawn. At some point, his mom was preparing lunch in the kitchen, and so his brother was in there, and so was his wife. Most of the children were playing in the living room. Oh, I feel like it's going to get bad. At 4 p.m., James woke up. He loaded his 35 Magnum, 2 of his 22 caliber handguns, and a rifle, then went downstairs. Entering the kitchen, he first shot and killed his brother Leonard, then his sister-in-law, and then his mother. Next, he took the rifle took the life of his nephew David and his nieces, Teresa and Carol, all in the comforts of the kitchen. James then proceeded to the living room where he killed his nieces Anna and his 4 remaining nephews, Leonard III, Michael, Thomas, and John. One child had been shot once in the chest. The remaining 10 victims had been shot 3 times, ensuring that they all died. The only signs of struggle at the crime scene was the overturned waste bin. The Butler County coroner theorized that James most likely shot the victims more than once to ensure that no one survived and no one escaped. The whole massacre took no more than 5 minutes. After spending 3 hours in the home, James finally called the police, where he waited outside for authorities to arrive. So his mom was 65 years old, his brother was 42, his sister-in-law was 38, Leonard Rupert III was 17 years old, Michael Rupert was 16 years old, Thomas Rupert was 15 years old, Carol was 13, Anne was 12, David was 11, Teresa was 9, and John was 4. Jesus Christ. The murder shocked the town of Hamilton and the entire country. Those who knew James Rupert did not think he was capable of such violence, especially the magnitude of this massacre. It was crazy. By all accounts, the neighbors said that the Ruperts were a very nice family. James was arrested and charged that day with 11 counts of aggravated homicide. He refused to answer any questions by police and was very uncooperative. He made it clear he would plead insanity. County prosecutor John Holcomb viewed the crime scene and stated there was so much blood on the first floor it was dripping through the floorboards into the basement, which to this day can still be seen on the wood. Jesus Christ. He fired a total of 35 rounds. All 4 weapons were recovered at the scene. All 11 victims were buried in Ohio together. A year later, the house was open to the public so that everybody could see. Everything inside was auctioned off. It was then clean, recarpeted, and rented to a new family in the area whose members were aware of the murders that had taken place there. The new family later moved out, claiming they were hearing voices and unexplained sounds. Other families have moved in and out of the house. It is still occupied. The original trial was in Hamilton, Ohio. A three-judge panel found him guilty of 11 counts of murder and sentenced him to life in prison. A mistrial was declared, and it was decided that the retrial would be held in Findlay, Ohio, 125 miles north, because it was believed he would not receive a fair trial in the city of Hamilton. The second trial began in June 1975. The prosecutors relived the evidence involving the witnesses who had seen him exchanging target, who had seen James doing the target practicing, asking about the silencer, and admitting that his mother was a pain in the ass and that he was sick of it. In July 1975, James received 11 consecutive life sentences. On appeal, a new trial was granted in 1982. Defense attorney Hugh Holbrook, convinced his client was insane, personally funded the hiring of expert psychologist, oh wow, from all from and oh therapists and psychologists from all over the country. On July 23rd, 1982, another three-judge panel found James guilty on two counts of first-degree murder, his mother and his brother, but found him not guilty on the other nine counts of murder by reason of insanity. He received a life sentence for each count to be served consecutively because capital punishment had been suspended in the United States from 1972 to 1976. That was my kid, just so you guys know. As a result of the Supreme Court's decision in Furman versus Georgia, and because the massacre on Minor Avenue had occurred in 1975, James could not receive the death penalty for his crimes. So, his current status, he has not passed on. As of December 2019, James remains at the Franklin Medical Center in Columbus, Ohio, a unit of the Ohio Department of Rehabilitations and Corrections. In June 1995, at the age of 61, he was granted a hearing before the parole board, and that was denied. He received another hearing in April 2015. It was again denied. He has another hearing in April 2025, but he will be 91 years old by then, so he will most likely be dead. Oh my goodness. Okay, so when I typed in Google Easter murders, I was like, there's probably not, because no asshole kills on Easter. I was wrong. So James is an ass, and he still lives amongst us. So his folks will get justice. I mean, good God, how long can you live for? If he's around in 2025, I will be amazed. But obviously, he's where he needs to be, getting the help and the counseling and all that he needs. Obviously, there's more to the story. But like I said, I just got his Wikipedia. So that's all I know. I just know the facts and what he did, who he did it to, and it's done with. And besides, it's Easter. This should have been like a little 15-minute break, maybe a potty break, listen to a pod. But unfortunately, I have to go cook food and get dinner ready and do all that stuff. So happy Easter, everyone. I love everybody. Thank you guys all so much for listening. You guys can listen to us. Jean's obviously not here. It is Easter. She is with her children and whatnot have you. And it's still the corona, so I think, I don't know honestly what I think. I have to talk to Jean. I don't know what's going on. We'll see. We'll get her back in here somehow, some way. But I have fallen in love with doing solo ones, so I'm gonna keep doing solo ones too, and then do some with her and all that fun jazz. So it'll be fun. But you guys can follow us on Facebook at It Is What It Is, a true crime podcast. On Twitter, It Is What It Is 208, because that's where I'm from. on Instagram at It Is What It Is Pod 19, all one word, that's all together. Our YouTube page is It Is What It Is, a true crime podcast. If I get 100 subscribers, I get my own URL, which is pretty fucking cool. So you should go subscribe and help a bitch out because I would love it and appreciate it. And like I said, happy Easter. I don't know what you guys all celebrate or whatnot. We're non-relig, so we just eat, get candy, and give my kid toys. So I don't know. But God bless for everybody, and have a good day, and stay corona-free. Peace out.